This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. Joining me in the studio this afternoon is Lori Niles, editor of Violinist.com, an online community of musicians focused on, of course, the violin. Lori has just released the book Violinist.com Interviews, Volume 1, and is here to share some stories. Welcome to Cincinnati Edition, Lori.
Glad to be here.
I wanted to ask about the start of Violinist.com because I was fascinated by the story that it was a birthday gift from your husband, and it has grown quite considerably since that time back in the 1990s.
It really did. It kind of started at the dawn of the internet, and my husband gave me this gift of Violinist.com, and this was before I even knew what a blog was, or I think anybody knew what a blog was, but it sort of evolved since then.
So. Well, when did it begin to take off? Because I know 1996, as you said, this is really the dawn of the internet. This was before, you know, I'm sure you got violinist.com very easily, while people today seek web addresses and come up done. But, I mean, when did you start developing it?
Well, what happened was we put it up there and allowed people to put their resumes up. That was actually the first thing we did. It was kind of Facebook for violinists back before Facebook. And then we also let people talk amongst themselves. We started the discussion board and we had people register. And I started noticing maybe about 5 years after we put it up that we were getting registrations from absolutely all over the world. From just about every continent, I would see something from South America, I would see something from England, and I had no idea how many people were so interested in the violin, and I started to feel a pretty big responsibility to really make something of this website and allow it to be something where people could find inspiration and also information about how to keep going with their violin.
So it went from being just a kind of discussion point to a website with a mission, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that's right. And at some point, my husband said, you need to start a blog. And I said, what's a blog? And, you know, and over the years, I think I defined it for myself. I have a degree in journalism as well as music. And so it was just perfectly suited for the kinds of things that I like to do, which was write stories about violinists and violin playing and all kinds of things.
Well, I know from my career in radio, you always remember that first big name performer that you get a chance to talk to. In my case, I was blessed with a chance to talk to the pianist Misha Dichter way back when, and remember being very nervous. Who was your first big name interview for Violinist.com?
Well, it was actually Hilary Hahn, and what a wonderful person to interview. She happened to be in Los Angeles, and her agent called and asked if I would be interested, and I, you know, just about fell over and said, well, of course. And I spoke to her for a very long time. She's such a fascinating person, not only just one of the best violinists out there today, but also extremely smart and with a wonderful sense of humor. And she was kind enough to write the introduction for this book that I've done. And so I've talked to her several times since, and it's always just a joy to talk to Hilary Hahn.
Fascinating stuff that you drew out of these violinists. You know, you talk about being a journalist. What is your approach when you're talking to Hilary or any of the other great violinists that you've spoken to that we read about here in the book?
Well, I usually want to highlight what they're doing at the moment, but I also like it when I can find something that lights them on fire a little bit, when they get to talking about something that really, really interests them, and sometimes that can be sort of surprising. I actually had a wonderful talk with Hilary Hahn about violin cases because on her Twitter feed, she actually tweets as her violin case,
yes,
which is just an example of her wonderful sense of humor. And I said, well, by the way, you know, how do you choose a good violin case? And she went into this long, detailed, wonderful explanation, which was really useful for the readers of my website about choosing a violin case.
I'm speaking with Lori Niles. She has put together Violinist.com Interviews Volume 1, a new book that is compilations of interviews from her website. She's also the editor of Violinist.com. You can learn more at our website, wvxu.org. And I was struck as I read these interviews how it does range from the very personal to, I won't say esoteric, but, very, very geared towards a violinist, things like violin cases that they, would find. Do you look for those kind of hints from these people who have made their name playing the violin?
Yeah, I look for a little bit of both. And some examples, there are a lot of cases where what this person has been through really speaks to anyone overcoming something. For example, Nadia Salerno Sonnenberg coming back and playing after she cut off the tip of her finger. What an amazing recovery she had, and what an amazing person she is. I think that kind of a story is something that would speak to anyone, whether they were a violinist or whatever they do. So I try to look a little bit for the universal and a little bit for the particular for this audience of violinists that I have on violinist.com.
Well, I mentioned Hillary and discovering that she's a rower, which I'll have to poke her about next time she's here. Actually, see if I can get her out in a boat. But I was also amused by your conversation with Sarah Chang and talking about choosing a dress for a concert, because as a performer, you don't want to be worrying about your dress while you're playing.
That's right. And she tells a really funny story about a little wardrobe mishap that happened to her during a concert. But what a neat thing. That was something that she was someone who has definitely done a lot of interviews, and when we hit upon the idea of talking about what she wore, she really actually brightened up and seemed to enjoy talking about that. And it is actually very, very important. It's maybe the first thing that people talk about when you walk onto stage, what you're wearing, and she's extremely good at making it fit the occasion, so...
Well, and also talking about shopping, you shared a love of shopping with her, too.
Well, you know.
Well, I what other personable facts did you discover talking to these violinists in your interviews?
Well, one of the ones that really struck me was when I spoke to Anne Akiko Myers, and I spoke to her. You may recognize her as the person who plays on the $18 million Vietone Guarneri del Yeso, one of the most important, well-preserved violins that exists right now. And of course, I think it's the most expensive one.
I think it is billed as that, yes.
And I spoke to her before she had that violin and right after she had bought a nice Stradivari for herself. And she talked about how difficult it had always been for her to borrow a violin. She didn't have one of her own. She had recorded everything on a different violin. And whenever they asked for it back, it was just really painful. She felt like she'd inserted her personality in this violin, and then she would have to give it back. And I thought, wow, that's just fascinating. And then she really went after owning her own instrument, and she's been a real champion of just educating people about these amazing old instruments.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because I it was intriguing to hear what she had to say about musicians' relationship with their instrument. That it really is, and it did kind of tug at the heartstrings when she was talking about having borrowed violins and having to give them back after she'd gotten so used to it. So
it's a theme that comes over and over again. For example, David Garrett, a German violinist who is very famous in Europe, and he does almost like these pop shows, and he sells out these stadiums. He actually fell down the steps with his Guadagnini violin and wrecked its value. It still sounds good, but it's not worth the several million dollars that it was before he fell down the steps with it.
I noticed that you do, while you're learning about the person behind the instrument and or the person playing the instrument, that you are also asking about some of the techniques and good habits of violinists. You talk about practicing, and it was, always brings a smile to a musician's face to learn that other musicians hate practicing as much as you do. But, Sarah Chang talking about, you think, well, she knows how to play everything, but she still does scales.
That's right. I mean, it's a theme that I hear over and over again. There's just no shortcut. You have to practice. You have to do your scales. You have to put in your time. And, people have always thought that maybe musicians have done some kind of special deal to get so good at what they do. Back in the day, they thought Paganini had made a deal with the devil, and that's why he could play so well. I have a sneaking suspicion that the man spent a lot of hours practicing, and that was a big part of why he was such a fantastic player.
And who was it that got to play and record Paganini caprices on Paganini's violin?
That was Ruggiero Ricci.
Yes.
And he's the one person in my... He's no longer with us, but I had the privilege of talking with him when he was in his 80s. And one of the first things he told me was that he was a child prodigy, and they had lied about his age as long as they possibly could. And then he felt like he was washed up at the age of about 15 because nobody was interested in him anymore. So the thing that he did to get people interested was to learn the hardest thing possible to play on the violin, which were the 24 Paganini caprices. And then he went and played it on the canon, which is the violin that Paganini actually played. And he had to take it out of a vault, I think, to play it.
And he learned the lesson, and I learned the lesson. Don't play a violin you haven't practiced on.
That's right. He said it was one of the hardest violins to play.
Well, I also noticed in Violinist.com Interviews Volume 1, discussion about sibling rivalry. Lara St. John and her brother actually plays the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra.
Oh, that's right. And they're both fantastic violinists. They started, I think, using the Suzuki method when they were very, very young and played together. But she said that he was always such a good sport that they really didn't have too much sibling rivalry. She said that when he won a contest, she would be happy for him and vice versa. Now, I don't know if they're looking back with rose-colored glasses. Maybe we would have to ask their mom.
Yeah, really. Well, among all these people you've spoken with, who was most difficult to arrange an interview with? I know that there are some that, you know, you really have to go through some layers and, you know, it feels like you succeeded just by getting a date and time down to be able to speak with someone. Was anyone difficult to track down for these interviews?
Interesting enough, on violinist.com there are about 120 of these interviews. The book has 27 of the most interesting ones. But since the book came out, I interviewed Midori, and that was probably actually the most difficult interview to get, if you will. I think she just liked to be very organized, so I had to submit the questions well in advance, and it was several months of kind of going between her and her agent and arranging things, and then finally we met, and it was lovely. We had tea and spoke for several hours, I think, but you know, she just wanted to be very organized with it, and so it was a long time to arrange it. And I had also been thinking about speaking with her for many years before it happened.
Well, that's interesting because Midori is the one I've been thinking about because even though she's visited Cincinnati a number of times, we've never been able to arrange an interview with her. So I kind of had her in mind when I asked that question, Lori. So that's interesting you answer that. So, well, who are you pursuing now? Who are some of the rising stars of the violin that you are hoping to be able to talk to? Any off the right off the top of your head?
Right now, I'm actually speaking to Aaron Rosand. And because I feel like it's not just important to speak to the people who are rising stars, but it's also important for me to connect the young people with those who have really, who are teachers and who have seen this art through the last century. And Aaron Rosand is a fantastic teacher. And he had a great career as well. This was a person who really had some wonderful stories to tell about just all the interesting violinists that we actually see on YouTube, like Yasha Heifetz, Nathan Milstein. And he knew them in person. And so I think it's really important to connect people, to connect the generations, really. The violinists who have been around for a long time, but also the young violinists who are up and coming. So I try to keep a balance. I will be going to the International Violin Competition of Indianapolis in the fall, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the violinists who are going to be playing there, and I will certainly be interviewing the winner of that. It's just going to be very exciting. I think if anybody can go up to Indianapolis in September, there's not only going to be the competition, but there's also going to be a big gathering of all the violin makers from around the nation. So it's going to be an exciting fall for the violin.
Well, exciting every day on violinist.com, and especially here in the book, too. Thanks for spending some time sharing some stories today.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Lori Niles, she is the editor of violinist.com and the author of violinist.com Interviews Volume 1. You can find out more about the book and Lori at our website, wvxu.org. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Mark Purcell.